Podcasting on 1470 WMBD is brought to you by The Mattress Doctor.
Mattress Doctor customers say it best.
I just feel this is the best purchase my husband ever made. I am sleeping so much better with my new mattress. My other one, I had pressure points in my hips, and I don't have that anymore. No more tossing and turning for me. I tell all my friends about The Mattress Doctor. It's just great. Anytime I'm going to buy a mattress, it's going to be from The Mattress Doctor.
The Mattress Doctor, delivering dreams to you.
Greg and Dan on WMBD. The Dan today is Dan Phillips. Dan DiIorio taking some days off. Dr. Adam Becker is here. He is with an organization that I am going to read the name of because it's long. He's executive director of the Consortium to Lower Obesity in Chicago Children. That's been around how long?
Since the end of 2002.
Nice to see you. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're in town to do what? Why are you in Peoria? And we'll start there and go from there.
Sure. I was here speaking primarily to the board of Quality Quest for Healthcare. It's a local nonprofit organization.
Dr. Gale and Friends.
That's right.
Like to go.
And also did a presentation at the College of Medicine yesterday.
The subject matter of which you spoke is the social ecology of childhood obesity, contributing factors and prevention strategies. What does the social ecology mean?
That's a fancy term for just acknowledging that how we behave is shaped in part by factors that are beyond ourselves. So in the context of childhood obesity, if you're talking about children and what they eat and how physically active they are, you certainly have to look at them themselves in terms of their interests, their tastes, their attitudes towards these things. But you also have to look at family dynamics, community conditions, and even public policy that gets set that helps to shape the conditions.
What kind of public policy would affect that?
Zoning decisions about where grocery stores can be located, taxation policy about or agriculture policy that sets prices for certain kinds of foods, what foods are available through public assistance, those kinds of things that happen outside of local communities.
And outside of a family's direct impact.
That's right.
But also, how about this? How about the creation of a community that is more active, friendly, bike paths and walking paths and parks and those kind of things. Does that have an effect? Because you can build them, but if nobody uses them.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, this is the beauty of sort of the social ecological model, if you think of it that way, is that it reminds us that there are these multiple factors and that we can't just focus on one. So, yes, community design is important.
Right.
If you live in a community with nice sidewalks and beautiful walking paths and bike lanes on your roads, then that facilitates walking and biking, but it doesn't mean that people will necessarily
walk and
do
bike,
that.
Right.
So you also have to do education for individuals, and encourage them and show them the importance of eating healthy and being physically active.
And it all ties in the social ecology, kind of the new urbanism that's putting grocery stores back in the neighborhoods and allowing people to have access to the fresh fruit and produce and exposure to the right type of habits.
That's right, and not just grocery stores. There's a lot of innovation around these days about how we get food to people. So farmers markets,
right.
Food and produce kiosks, even food pantries are diversifying what they make available. More and more you're finding fresh produce in food pantries, and that didn't used to be the case.
This is the back-to-school time of year, of course. Then that brings around the discussion of school lunches, which I don't know what I believe about that. What are your thoughts about this impact of school lunches?
Well, it's a complicated problem. I mean, the school lunch program, historically was created because of starvation, because kids were going to school hungry.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so the food in the school food system is high in calorie, fills kids up,
right.
And we've been living with the same standards now for, over a decade. So the Child Nutrition Act is up for reauthorization in Congress, and there's a lot of debate and discussion about new nutrition standards. Reimbursement for school lunch that goes back to school districts is set in that national policy. It's expensive for schools to serve healthy food, just like it's expensive for us to buy healthy food for ourselves. So it's definitely a complex problem. That's a great another example of where policy is important at the federal level, but also the local school districts make decisions about who their food vendor is going to be and having to work with the contractors and that kind of thing.
Is this a fair statement that a child who eats school lunches, that's only 5 meals a week? So all the other meals certainly have a bigger impact. your answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that varies by community. I know that in Chicago, for example, some kids eat two meals, sometimes even three meals at
school. I forget that sometimes. Yeah. A lot of kids eat breakfast and lunch there.
That's right. And you also have to think about the food that's available to kids while they're getting to school, if they're walking. There was a study out of Philadelphia that showed that kids consumed about 600 extra calories a day in the stores, you know, sort of gas station and corner stores along their route. In the cases where kids are just eating that one meal, it's only, you know, one third of their meals. But we also, as a society, we do a lot less of the three squares these days. We're doing a lot more grazing all day long. I'm sure all of us in the room can identify times when we've just, you know, grabbed a bag out of the cabinet. We eat it while we're walking around the house and doing whatever. So it's definitely something that we need to look at. And if school lunches are healthy, that gives kids that much more, you know, advantage.
Dr. Adam Becker is in our studio. The issue is childhood obesity. The question now I have for you is, we have your consortium, been around for 8 years, going on nine, in Chicagoland. Certainly Quality Quest is working on this. District 150, I know, is working on some stuff. We've had people in here. All good. How do we get enough of me and Dan and everybody else to care?
Yeah.
How do we, it feels like we are buried every day with, you should do this, this, and this to be a better person. And I think there's a tune-out factor. How do we break through that?
Well, I think a number of things have happened to help. First of all, the First Lady deciding that childhood obesity is a national priority has kind of refocused the nation's energy and attention on this. I think it's important to understand where your community stands in terms of childhood obesity rates. So, for example, in Chicago, we just did a study and found that 22% of kids entering school at ages 3 to 7 were obese. So that's almost 1 in 4 kids.
And that does not count overweight.
Right, that's
obese. I always say this, obese is a medical definition, not a judgment. I think we've used that word so judgmentally over the years.
That's correct.
It's charged.
Yeah, they're both sort of medical terms, overweight
and obese. Right.
In kids is, you know, if you're 85th to 95th percentile height and weight for your age and sex, obesity is 95th and above.
Right.
So understanding the rates in your community, I just talked about the Chicago rates. We know that the state of Illinois was recently ranked fourth in the nation for obesity
among kids.
Fourth worst.
Right.
Yep. Louisiana was fifth. Usually it's the Gulf South that has the highest rates, so the fact that we're now up in that bunch ought to be concerning to Illinois residents.
And I thought I read, maybe you can help me with this, but I thought I read Peoria's rate is 30%. Which is higher than the state level.
That is higher than the state level.
I believe it's 30%.
Yep. Yeah.
So it is an issue that it's not just cosmetic. This is financial. This is productive Americans going on to be doctors.
That's
and be radio guys.
And it's also health condition of kids as children. A lot of times we think about, well, you know, a child's overweight, they'll outgrow it. By the time they're adults, they'll be healthy.
Oh, well, that was kind of the model when we grew up. They'll stretch it out. They'll be fine.
And for some kids, that's true. But we know more and more that's not the case. Kids that are overweight are much more likely to be overweight as adolescents than much more likely to be overweight as adults. But the disease outcomes that happen from overweight and obesity are no longer just adulthood illnesses. So we used to talk about adult onset diabetes.
Right.
There are so many young kids now presenting at their doctor's office with type 2 diabetes, we can't call it adult onset anymore. Kids deal with musculoskeletal problems, you know, bone and joint. If their their growing bones are carrying too much weight, they certainly have heart problems. They have emotional health problems. There's still some stigma attached to being extremely overweight. You talked about school performance. We know that kids who are overweight have higher absenteeism. They're not at school as much, which is a disadvantage for them. Fitness is related to academic performance. And then, you know, the costs to society later on with insurance costs that are related to claims that are obesity specific, as well as productivity in the workforce. Employees that are overweight are much more likely to be sick more frequently. And so it's a snowballing problem. And childhood is the first place to start. It's a lot harder as an adult to shed those extra pounds than it is when you're a child.
I read the other day that one of the generals in charge of recruiting for the United States military said 17 to 24-year-olds, that group of people they recruit, I believe that was the 28 or 30% of them are not fit enough to serve in the military.
That's correct.
And he said, we need those millions of young men and women who are not available to us. We got to have them.
That's right.
And so that even from a military standpoint, from a protection of our country standpoint, it's an issue.
Yep, just about any priority you as an individual have for this country is affected by the obesity problem.
Greg and Dan on WMBD, Dan Phillips in for Dan DiIorio. Dr. Adam Becker is here. It's nice to meet you, sir. The director of the Consortium to Lower Obesity in Chicago is in town talking to some folks, Quality Quest for Health, among others. The state is looking at doing some things, right?
That's right. There's a newly forming what we're calling the Illinois Alliance to Prevent Obesity. This is a group of organizations from all across the state that are starting to come together because, as we were talking about earlier, we know that some of the things that are going to help us in our local communities have to be state actions. And so we need the whole state to come together to think about what's going to be the priority changes that need to happen in the state, what kinds of policies do we need to set as a state, and we need to hear from local communities what will be feasible, what will be desired, et cetera.
Right.
So organizations here can link up to that. You can probably just Google it. I wish I knew a web address for it, but it's being spearheaded by the Illinois Public Health Institute. So if you go to their website, right, you can find out information about the
Alliance. Can the government fix this problem, though? I mean, really, like most problems, it's up to us. It's up to us to jump on board and do something individually in our homes.
They certainly can't do it by themselves,
right,
but neither can we. So I think we need, you know, individuals in their families, in their homes, community leaders, but we also need the government to take the right kinds of action.
The number, again, in the state of Illinois is how many kids are obese going into school?
In Chicago, we found 22% of 3 to 7-year-olds. The state was ranked fourth at about 21%.
I think Peoria was 30. And maybe that wasn't going into school, but rate amongst school children.
Yep.
Certain ethnicities certainly have a harder time with this issue than others. African-American girls, Latino boys are the highest rates.
That's right. That's what the national research
is. Is it a cultural issue there? I mean, what explains that?
The culture is certainly a part of it. I mean, I think if we knew what was causing that, we would solve it.
Sure.
It's complex. Issues around body image. We know that in African American traditions, heavier women are more highly sought after and consider themselves to be sexy. That's different probably in Latino and white communities. It's hard to say why these things are happening, but
right,
understanding that the pattern exists is important because then we know where to put resources.
What do we do? What do we do today? Give me something that folks driving to work, maybe this issue is at home with them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not an issue at home, but they want to get involved or at least take a baby step forward.
Well, at the consortium, which we call CLOC, we believe that it's about healthy lifestyles for kids at all sizes. And so we have a public education message that we think every kid and even every adult can try to follow. It's 5-4-3-2-1-GO. It stands for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, 4 servings of water, 3 servings of low-fat dairy, 2 hours or less of screen time, and 1 hour or more of physical activity every day. And
that's a good system.
Sets kids off on the right foot.